Join the conversation. On Cape Talk.
It's 12 minutes past nine on a Sunday morning, which means it's time to go to Gavin Gray for the UK Report. Hello, Gavin.
Hi there, Sarah Jane.
How are things? How are things in your hot neck of the woods?
Yes, hot.
Yeah, so I gather.
Yes. Well, not only are we in a national heat wave now, we've had 4 days in the mid-30s, I think, and today's due to be the hottest before it cools slightly on Monday, then talk of torrential thunderstorms on Tuesday and Wednesday. The problem being, of course, that the ground is so baked dry that any quick, hard rain will simply run off. Of course, I don't need to explain these things to you guys, but that is a major concern. We will then get flooding in areas where the water is not going into the ground. And we are now declared a national drought.
Sure.
Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because it gives the water companies much greater powers to basically ration, save, the hose pipe ban, put in all sorts of other things that normally they have to ask politicians to agree to. But we're now in a state of drought,
sure,
and that means they've got far more power.
Listen, we know all about being in a state of drought. You'll probably remember that a few years back, Cape Town was in a dire situation. Luckily, that has improved slightly. But yeah, we know all about shower with a friend.
Yeah.
We've jumped ahead, though, Gavin, or rather I have. My apologies. You've got an update for us on Salman Rushdie, who, of course, was stabbed at a book event, I believe, on Friday morning.
Yeah, that's right, in America. So Salman Rushdie, born in Bombay, but lived and educated in the UK. He has been taken off a ventilator and apparently is talking again. This is according to his agent, who confirmed to the US media. But there is still fear that he may have very little mobility in one arm. The nerves, apparently, of that arm were slashed in this stabbing attack, and he may also lose an eye. Now, those of you who may remember Salman Rushdie, he's now 75, but he faced years of death threats for his novel, The Satanic Verses, which some Muslims see as blasphemous. And indeed received protection around the clock at the expense of the UK taxpayer for many, many years after the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the then Iranian leader, issued a fatwa or a decree calling for his assassination, putting a £2.5 million bounty on his head. Now, it's being reported that he did have at this lecture in a theater in America, in the New York State, two security guards with him, two bodyguards with him, and yet they obviously were not able to prevent a 24-year-old, it's alleged a 24-year-old man, who is the chief suspect, who was arrested at the scene, Hadi Mata, and he has apparently been charged over the attack and pleaded not guilty to attempted murder, but he's been remanded in custody without bail.
Sure, I was absolutely shocked when I read that. And Salman Rushdie, I mean, I think at the time, Satanic Verses was in 1988, I think, which is when the fatwa happened. And I remember, you know, it's not often that as an 8-year-old you're remembering the name of, you know, novelists and writers and things. But his name was mentioned all the time, that I think he even became a Trivial Pursuit question or answer at one point. And it sort of always lodged in my mind. I've never read it, I must say, or Midnight Children, which of course was his, did it win a Booker or Pulitzer or something? Anywho.
Yes, I mean, he is an award-winning author.
Yeah.
He's done very well. But you're right. I think the shock for us in the UK and many countries around the world was that the leader of another nation could put a sort of bounty on somebody.
Sure.
It was extraordinary. That's why I think it was so shocking at the time and remains shocking. It was never formally withdrawn, this bounty. Yes, whoever has committed the attack, and as I said, there is a chief suspect who's been charged now, the questions will remain as to why that person has attacked, whether it was for money, whether it was because they deemed Islam, the Prophet Muhammad had been insulted. But yes, plenty of work for the investigators to be doing.
Yeah, indeed. There was an awful lot of conversation, Gavin, during the height of the COVID pandemic around children and children getting vaccines for COVID. But now, all children aged between 1 and 9 and living in the Greater London area are going to be offered a polio vaccine. Why is that?
Yeah, I'm afraid there's a great deal of concern about the increasing levels of polio here in the UK, it is something that actually, by and large, pretty much thought had been knocked on the head, frankly. People didn't think it was happening. But what's happened now is that the virus, which can cause paralysis, has been found 116 times in London's sewerage system since February. Now, why is that a problem? Well, it would appear that somebody has come from abroad into the UK with a live vaccine of the virus, and it somehow has got into the sewerage and then mutated. And it are the mutations, rather like coronavirus, if that sounds familiar, it's these mutations which the authorities are very fearful about, because if it's the normal polio, then frankly, it's easy to stop and stamp out. But if it's mutations which aren't going to respond to the oral polio vaccine, then that may be a really, really difficult problem. So, yes, up to, I think it's over a million children are going to be offered the vaccine. Parents and carers are going to be contacted by their local doctors within the next month. And although the UK was declared polio-free in 2003, this is obviously very concerning.
Yeah, it is, for sure. This is an interesting one. Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, has called on all Western countries to ban all Russian visitors.
Yeah, I quite like this, actually, because we are all now noticing the effects of the sanctions placed on Russia. And that is because most of us, of course, are reliant on energy in some way, shape or form. And now we've seen energy costs spike. Plus, of course, we are reliant on countries like Ukraine for grain. Well, of course, there were blockades of the port, though those, thankfully, have now eased in a deal with Russia. But of all of the different things that have been put into place and cost us, as it were, cost us financially and cost us with other matters, President Zelensky's latest suggestion is one that I really think should gain some traction. But sadly, for reasons I will explain, I don't think it will. He's basically saying we should ban Russia from the rest of the world, because it is only then that basically the people of Russia will rise up, realize that everyone is pretty fed up with what's going on in Ukraine, and that the philosophy that they have will have to change. Zelensky has said such a ban would be much more effective than the current sanctions, which bar Russian airlines and officials linked to the Kremlin. But ordinary Russians can still get into the European Union and US. And the reasons that they are, although the flights have been banned, is, of course, we have a Schengen zone, as it's called, so you can land in one bit of the EU and then are able to travel right around the EU. So that's been a problem. The reason I think it may fail is because Russia's tourists prop up the economies of Egypt, Turkey, and certainly assist the United Arab Emirates. So they're going to be very reluctant to sever all ties with Russia and Russians. However, the plan has drawn some praise. The Estonian Prime Minister said in a tweet, "Stop issuing tourist visas to Russians. Visiting Europe is a privilege, not a human right." The Latvian Foreign Minister said that EU countries should restrict issuing visas with an exemption for humanitarian reasons. And Finland as well, also backing restrictions. So there is some support for this, but I can't see it being put into practice, I'm afraid.
Yeah, for sure. Gavin, I don't know if you're like me, but if I happen to leave the office with even so much as a pen, a Bic pen, I sort of go into panic and think they're going to think I'm stealing. But I needn't worry, because a man in Spain stole 7,000 hams from his job, although he's paying the price now.
Yes. Now, let me just clarify. These are not slices of ham in a pack.
No.
These are entire legs and haunches of ham. And it's not just any normal ham.
Oh, right.
It's a special ham.
It would want to be.
Absolutely. Because it is made from the piglets that forage across a region in Spain, and for the last few months of their lives, the last 3 months, these special Blackfoot pigs, as they are called, are fed exclusively on acorns. And the meat is very, very tender as a result. And each haunch, as it were, can sell for roughly £450. So you're then talking up into the 8,000, 9,000 South African rand. They are very, very sought after. Anyway, a man in charge of the curing factory, because, of course, these hams are cured when the raw meat comes in, managed to steal some 7,000 hams over a six-year period. And basically, he set up this system where most of them went into the real official curing process. However, he had a sort of hotline on his phone where clients that were private to him would effectively place an order. And he would put them to one side, and then they wouldn't go through the books, as it were. So he was in charge of taking delivery of these jamon, as they're called, and responsible throughout the entire curing process. But during the process, he would then sell them on using a messenger service. Now, he has been jailed in total, incidentally. The value was magnificently enormous, £439,000 worth of ham, €520,000. So a quick bit of maths there will tell you that this is an 8 million South African rand theft. He was jailed, he was facing 6 years in jail, but actually is now having it reduced to 11 months and 29 days because it has taken so long for this whole case to come to trial. But nevertheless, he has been jailed for his theft.
God, that's extraordinary. A sad story now. A beluga whale that was stranded in the Seine has had to be put down.
Yes, it's very sad. This captured the hearts of so many people because a lot of it was on social media and a lot of it was officially posted with videos. But he was a 4 metre long, 13 foot long, 800 kilogram whale. And normally used to the northern Atlantic waters, the cold waters. Now, the problem is the Seine was both too hot for it. Nobody quite know where why he swam upstream. And he did reach a matter of tens of kilometers just outside of Paris. So he went a considerable distance up there. Now, they tried to feed this beluga whale, which is incidentally white, so it was very easy to spot in the muddied waters of the Seine. They tried to feed it with frozen herring. They tried to lure it out with other tidbits they hoped it would enjoy, but it just didn't feed. It was losing weight rapidly. It was obvious that it wasn't well. They were then talking about trying to give it a sort of vitamin boost to try and keep it going. And eventually they decided the only way was to try and lift it out via crane and take it back to the coast. But in that whole process, I'm afraid, the whale just became ill and they decided to put it down. Now, I'm afraid similar stories are not unheard of in both the River Seine, but also here in the River Thames, where these lovely animals come the wrong way and come upstream a long way and then just simply seem to get lost and disorientated.
Oh, it's so sad. They're such extraordinary looking creatures, aren't they, beluga whales? Sad. All right, Eurovision. Always been a big fan of Eurovision. It's never quite been the same since the death of the late, great Tessa Wogan, of course. But what's the latest on Eurovision, please, Gavin?
Well, of course, now it was won by Ukraine. But the authorities have decided that although Ukraine did want to host it, it quite simply wasn't going to happen. They didn't feel security-wise it would be safe. They also just thought, well, will people want to turn up? And will Ukraine have the infrastructure to be able to host it? So who came second? The UK came second in Eurovision back in May, and now the UK is going to host it. Now, this may sound wonderful, because to the local city, it is a massive boost to their overall finances. However, for the BBC, whose job it will be to transmit this item to dozens of television stations around the world, also to make sure that there are links, of course, with the judges, live links to dozens of nations around the world. This is a major expense, running into many, many millions of pounds, and the BBC is trying to cut many millions of pounds from its budget. Anyway, all of that to one side, it's being hosted in the UK. The question is where? Well, they have limited it down now to a handful of host cities. The problem is where precisely, because no venues in any of those applicant host cities are free for the, well, it looks like 6, 7, 8 weeks that they will need to set the thing up, hold it, and then take it down. And that means that other gigs, other events happening in those venues are going to have to be moved and shifted. What I'm trying to tell you is this is a logistical nightmare. Magic Mike, Andre Rieu, and Elton John all have shows booked in places bidding to host the contest. And it does look as though it's going to cause some fixture nightmares for some of those in charge of these things. Incidentally, will it be held in London? No. London did not make the shortlist of venues. Instead, we're getting lots of suggestions it'll be in the north of England now, or perhaps even Glasgow in Scotland.
Gosh, all right. He's someone we would never give nil point to. It's Gavin Gray. Thank you very much indeed, Gavin. We'll chat to you next week. Goodbye. So long. Farewell.